BrutalResistanceRadio.com now has a page on Facebook. Visit us at facebook.com/BrutalResistanceRadio. Brutal Resistance Radio features a wide variety of styles from the metal underground, plenty of live shows and podcasts, and our random metal programming brought to you 24/7. So check us out and tune in, and check out our complete schedule of shows by going to BrutalResistanceRadio.com. You can also check us out at MySpace.com/BrutalResistanceRadio. Also check us out on Facebook and also on Twitter. Tune in and crank it up.
What is up, everybody out there? It is Beast of the Bay, and I've got a special show for you guys tonight. If you haven't heard, Harold from DRI, as well as Brian Liu, have got a book about the Bay Area metal scene, a whole bunch of pictures that were taken back in the early 80s, and I did an interview with him about 3 hours ago, rushed home from Oakland, and got it ready for you guys, so I hope you enjoy it. He's got some funny stories, and the guy had me laughing so hard at times that if you hear me just chuckling away, you know I was having a good time with Harold, and I hope you guys enjoy this interview. There'll be a couple tunes in the middle of the interview as well to kind of keep things rolling, but I wanted to say thanks to Harold from DRI letting me into his home, and we walked over to a cool park and did a little interview, so enjoy, guys. Check it out.
While the beach set twists to the big beat sound of the Delairs, swinging out with six rocking hits, while the cycle gangs burn up the road and strong arm their way into the party with fists flying, while teenagers prepare for a secluded slumber party, terror strikes from the bottom of the sea. An invasion of ghoulish atomic beasts who live off human blood.
Wreaking his prehistoric fury on modern man and his puny machines. Cities would be terrorized by the cruel intruder from the past. Populations crazed and panicked with fear by its destructive force. Granite and steel would crumble. Soldiers and their weapons would be powerless before the onslaught of the beast. The beast. The beast.
The beast of the bear.
Listening to Beast of the Bay on BrutalExistenceRadio.com, and I am with Harold O, who is the one of the photographers for the killer new book that's coming out, Murder in the Front Row, that pretty much chronicles all the early days, the golden age of Bay Area metal thrash. Thanks for doing this with us, Harold.
What's going on? Great to be here.
We will we'll delve into all the old school pictures that he's taken and kind of go back and bring you back to a time when all of the big four were all kids, including Harold himself out there with his camera. So let's just kind of just go right into, how did you start out with the whole photography thing and getting into the shows, taking all the pictures back in the day?
Well, when I first started, Metallica were pretty much unknown at that point. But I saw them once, and I took photos, and I brought the photos to the next show when they played again, and they liked them so much they ended up using some on the album and stuff, and I just got to know the band pretty well over the years. But a lot of times it's because I drink quite a bit, and I couldn't remember the shows, so I started taking photos so I could remember what happened and stuff. And then I got to know Metallica guys and Exodus, Slayer used to come up here all the time, blah, 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 and so on and so forth. But it was just a way to remember the drunken times that we had, you know. And there were many.
And it's good you had. So what made you bring this? I mean, if it was me back in the day, I probably would have had the cheapest little crappiest camera and hoping the pictures would come out. But after seeing all these pictures, you brought for that time, a fat camera. Were you totally into photography and everything?
Not at first. Some of my earlier stuff isn't so hot, but pretty much self-taught. Nobody ever showed me that you had to rewind the film back into the canister, so I just shredded the entire film the first couple times. So, but good question, actually. I wish I knew the answer, but it was just a way to capture the good times, you know.
And everybody was cool back then about bringing cameras in. They didn't give a crap, whereas nowadays you flash your cell phone in the air and somebody from the crew is coming around telling you to put it down and all that.
Yeah, exactly. Photo passes didn't even exist pretty much back then, you know. But no, it was a golden time. One thing I want to stress is there wasn't much distinction between the bands and the fans. Everybody just hung out together, and it was like the bands were the fans, and vice versa, you know. So like a Ruthie's Inn and the Stone, and the Mab across the street in San Francisco, those were like the regular hangout places, you know. Ruthie's Inn on San Pablo in Berkeley, that was about 2 miles from Metallica House, so they could pretty much walk home if we got too drunk or whatever, which happened, you know, all the time, you know.
The Metallica House, the famous Metallica House. I've heard a bunch of stories about
3132 Carlson Avenue in El Cerrito.
El Cerrito.
Yes. It's not the house that Joel Selvin from the Chronicle said in his book. He actually printed the wrong address, so all these people are going to the wrong house now in El Cerrito and think Metallica lives there. So, Joel Selvin, if you're listening to this, you're wrong, pal. It's not two doors down.
Oh, I've got one of these times, I don't want to go into a whole other story, but Larry Howe from Vicious Rumors talked about how
Larry Howe.
He talked about his experiences with his car getting trashed at the Metallica House, but that's a whole another thing. Yeah, good times back then. And how did you, were those clubs all under 18 allowed you in these places, or were they pretty much, it was 21 and you just pretended you were?
No, it was pretty much all ages, but like Ruthie's was the one place where you could kind of do whatever you wanted there. There was like no security there at all. Anything kind of went there. And one thing about Ruthie's that was so great was they served us even though we weren't 21, some of us. And then after 2 o'clock, they would, you know, give us 12 packs and cases of beer, so we'd go over to Paul Bailoff's house and party all night with, you know. But Ruthie's was great. Wes Robinson put on the shows there. He was a promoter, and started out as a blues club, but then the punk scene and the metal scene started happening, and then slowly but surely, they had more and more metal shows there at Ruthie's in Berkeley. So, but the Stone was pretty uptight. The big Bob Corona, the owner of the Stone, he was the most intimidating guy ever. He didn't take no crap, though. He was involved in a double murder-suicide about 5 years ago. He's the kind of guy you'd think something like that would happen to, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, but chaos reigned. It was a crazy time back then, you know?
Right. Yeah, we just went by the Stone about a month ago. I said, what the hell? I wonder what it is nowadays.
And Boys Toys, it's, right?
It's a strip club.
Yeah, exactly. Fitting in. And another strange thing with the kind of interesting thing with the book coming out is Ruthie's Inn is now a bookstore. It's, so we were thinking of having maybe a signing thing there. It'd be kind of appropriate, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. That'd be friggin' awesome.
So,
what would you say that the guys have, other than the few that I've seen, what do you think that these guys are going to, are they just stoked to see that somebody's got these pictures? I mean, who has seen these pictures so far other than you?
Well, some of them they've seen through the year. I mean, they've got prints of some of them probably from a long time ago, like Metallica and stuff. But, no, it should be pretty interesting to see what they think of them. Hopefully it'll bring back a big sense of nostalgia for them. Like Metallica at the Cleveland Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they flew like 150 of us. Paid for everything, flew us out there for that celebration they had there, and that kind of brought the whole nostalgic thing back again. In fact, that's what inspired the Big Four from the get-go. They said it was getting together with the guys from Anthrax and seeing all their old friends. They said, why don't we just do a tour, you know, with all four of the bands. So, but the book is mainly, let's say, Metallica, Exodus, Slayer, Megadeth, good section on Possessed, then some of the second division bands like Testament and Violence and Blind Illusion, stuff like that. But it's mainly just going to be shots of people hanging out. And one thing I think the pictures really convey is how much fun we had. Every picture, everyone's like hugging each other and everyone's laughing. It's probably because we were so drunk and on various other things at the time, you know. But that's kind of what's missing from the metal scene today. The scene here in the Bay Area is really cool, but I think the pictures totally show like a camaraderie between all the bands and everything. And totally show how much fun it was, you know, hopefully.
Right. And how about those side gigs of Spastic Children and all those?
Yeah, that was an interesting thing. The Spastic Children thing was a Metallica side band, of course, and James played drums, Cliff played bass, and this guy named Fred Cotton would just make horrible noise, and they would bill it as Spastic Children, and the logo looked like a little kid wrote it, like the S was backwards and everything. And they just play this horrible spewage noise. They practiced a couple times. They stopped practicing because it started sounding too good, they said, you know. I did an interview with Cliff one time, and he said it was just an excuse to go out and bash a few and drink a few.
There you go.
And next thing you know, people hear it's the guys in Metallica, and people start going to the gigs thinking it's going to be some kind of musical thing. It ends up being this horrible spewage Mentors punk noise. They actually had a song about me. It's kind of not too complimentary. It's called The Ballad of Harold.
I was just going to ask you about that. That was my segue.
I'm not going to go into the, well, I maybe I should, but my name's Harold. I got one ball. I pick up guys at the shopping mall. It's really bad, but I happened to be at one of their practices once, and Cliff Burton started playing this bass line. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And the singer Fred just looked at me and started just saying these horrible insults. Next thing you know, that became the Ballad of Harold, you know? And it was like one of their songs. That ended up being their big hit. They'd save that for the encore every night. And then when they played locally, I would get all drunk and dance on stage, and I thought it was great, you know? Except for the one time when I was sober, then I wasn't so funny, you know?
But, hey, they're talking shit about me.
You can say shit on Sirius
Hey,
radio?
It's internet radio. You can say whatever you freaking want.
Fuck, shit, piss, hell, death.
Anyway. You could say all that, yeah.
I just did.
You can
so
even
we're
say
not
more.
Censored. There's no. There's no
internet radio. That's the best thing about it right there.
Oh, that's
you
my
can
Howard
say
Stern birthday.
Whatever the hell you want.
Awesome.
I try to keep it clean only because I have a few parents from my hockey team that I coach.
Well, this is for you, parents. This, if you're listening, and kids, stay in school and don't do drugs.
There's your public service announcement from Harold O.
Yes.
From DRI.
Awesome.
I'm going to have a little break here. Let's Harold think about some tunes that he would like to hear on the radio show, since maybe he might be tuning in tonight. So just top of your head, man, the first badass song from back in the day that just drove you insane, I will play it. You name it, you roll it in right now, say this is whatever from whatever, and
whatever
I play
whoever?
It. All right, yeah.
This is whatever from whoever. With I think the most appropriate song would be "Bonded by Blood" by Exodus. It has the classic line, "Murder in the front row, crowd begins to bang, and there's blood upon the stage."
There you go.
So there you go. This is Exodus with "Bonded by Blood." How appropriate.
know, I know some people get kind of like, hey, man, there was, you know, don't mention that. I don't know.
I
didn't think so, but, yeah. You know, I still ask. You know.
The pictures of Lars doing coke, maybe. Or the one at Dave Lombardo smoking a big joint, you know.
We could throw that in there right now.
Awesome.
That could be
in
there.
Let's do some.
That's
the money shot. We were thinking of having a fucking centerfold. Have it be like Lars doing a big pile of blow. Or Slayer zigzagging. That's the last photo in the book.
Oh, nice.
It's a Slayer say goodbye. And it's got this Toby guy licking the top of Kerry King's bald head. Gary Holt looks like he's waving. Hanneman's zigzagging. And you can see half of Rob Flynn's face in the picture, one eye, and he's wearing a suicidal headband. Yeah. All right, we're back with Harold O.
There you go.
On Brutal Existence Radio, BER, coming at you live from Oakland downtown.
Yeah, we are. We're sitting here. I'm looking at the beautiful sunny sunset kind of buildings in downtown Oakland. And this is a part of Oakland I've never been.
Same here.
And it's actually a lawn bowling court.
Yes.
There's a heavy lawn bowling presence in Oakland, California, I can tell.
Definitely. At least heavy.
So, Harold's book, Murder in the Front Row, you guys got to check this out. How many? 300 pages?
400.
400 pages.
Yes.
What do you think you guys are selling this thing at?
I think it's going to be $34.95.
Does it come with Ginsu knives?
No.
If you order in the next five minutes?
If you order in the next 5 minutes, you will get the free dust cover, exclusive dust cover from Bazillion Points, featuring my Metallica shot in their backyard giving the finger. And on the back side of that is Exodus from Ruthie's that me and Brian took. And order now. If you order in the next 5 minutes, we'll send two dust covers for you. No, but if you order, you can order the book from bazillionpoints.com. That's BAZILLIONPOINTS, bazillionpoints.com. And if you order from them, you'll get the free dust cover featuring Metallica and Exodus.
There you go. I didn't even have to coax him into all of that right there. That
over
was all
10 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. Hopefully.
Hopefully. I think that from everybody I've talked to, I know a lot of people bag on Facebook, but it's been a great way to kind of communicate with everybody through all the different kinds of metal groups and stuff, just throwing your link out there. And if you guys haven't checked it out yet, get on. All you got to do is write in Murder in the Front Row, and on Facebook there it pops up. There's like 700 likers or something right now. There should be way more. There's way more metalheads out there that need to jump on there and find out. And Harold's been posting all kinds of teaser photos for the last month or two.
It should be out on December 13th.
December
Available
13th.
At fine bookstores everywhere. And even though all the bookstores are closing, if you have a Borders or any place that sells like books with paper and words in them and photos, you should be able to find it there. But Amazon... selling it too, but you don't get the free dust cover.
Got to have the dust cover. Yeah. Limited edition.
What's
your take on, so a lot of people, especially, this is what my take on metal has been in existence since 1970, as far as I'm concerned, with Sabbath.
That's
coming
the best
out.
Stuff. Yes,
70 Sabbath, that's when it started. So what we got now is we're 40 years into metal, and all of the guys that were our icons are kind of getting up there in age, and you got your Aussies and your Judas Priests and all that stuff, and then you got your second level of those guys with your Megadeth and Metallica's hitting 50 years old and all that. What do you see with the newer, younger generation with the metal? What is your take on what's going on right now?
The DRI thing is great because when I tour and stuff, I get to get a good cross section of what people are into and stuff all over the States and South America and Europe and stuff. And it's great, especially Los Angeles. Whenever we play down there, it's a bunch of Hispanic kids that are like 18, 19 years old. Exodus called them Satanic Hispanics, which is perfect, but they're totally into it. And I always trip on, it's like, how do they even hear about DRI, you know, from their brother's record collection? And it just seems to be word of mouth and stuff, but... thank God there's younger people that are into DRI, or else we wouldn't have a career.
And you guys have just got off a tour that went down to Mexico. And
Yeah, exactly. We've been pretty much touring nonstop since Spike recovered from his cancer. But it's amazing. And there's a bunch of new bands like Warbringer and that we played with, this band called Violator from South America that are great. And There's this total sect, Bonded by Blood. There's this total, like, new wave of thrash bands that, you know, kids wearing high tops and, you know, a denim vest with all the patches and stuff. And it kind of almost brings a tear to my eye, but it's so great to see people still into that type of music, you know. And DRI is actually probably going to record 4 songs, finally. For the first time in 13 years, finally DRI is recording some new material. So it's been a long time coming.
I was just going to say that a lot of the thrash bands are, I don't think they're stealing. I think they are definitely grabbing some licks here and there in the style of, and then throwing their own thing. I know this band Lazarus AD is and they're on tour with Warbringer right now.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to be here at the Parkside here.
Those guys are cool guys. Yeah, we've done some shows with them. They're great. Yeah. I partied all night long with them. I scribbled on their bus. I did a big masterpiece on their inside of their bus. But yeah, it's awesome. That's another band too. You know, they're like the future of thrash. So
yeah, a lot of times those nostalgia bands come out and they kind of rip it off and kind of almost poke fun at it. But those guys are with YouTube and everything. You can tell that they've done their homework and it's not just like, oh, let's try to jump on something that was cool.
Right,
they love it. They love it. And they're, a lot of the kids nowadays are recognizing that a lot of the music out right now kind of sucks, and they're having to go back, and they have the tools like YouTube to freaking find out what the hell was it like in 1983. I've seen those videos on YouTube of Slayer at the Stone and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, it's great stuff. Classic. Totally.
And what would you say back then? What was your, if you had a show that was like just the ultimate, everybody's got their favorite concert that they've ever been to, what was the one that you can say that was just like, holy crap?
That's probably Metallica, Dan the Green, 1985. They played with Yngwie Malmsteen, Scorpions, Rat, and Y&T. And it was the biggest hometown show they had ever done up to that point. And 65,000 people in Oakland Stadium. And it was just amazing. That was the first time I was ever like really allowed backstage at such a major show like that.
And, did you get shots of that one?
Oh, I got tons of shots. There's tons of shots.
Are they in that book?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, awesome, awesome.
That was like Metallica's big homecoming show. That was the first show when like, I really thought that they might turn into something bigger, you know? It was incredible. I had a little too much to drink because I didn't have any lunch that day. And that's the time when James and Fred Cotton and I, we trashed the dressing room, Metallica's dressing room backstage. We crammed a bunch of avocados through the air conditioning vents and just totally trashed the entire dressing room. And George Michael from Wham was supposed to use that same dressing room the next day. And he had to change in somebody's station wagon or something instead because we trashed the dressing room. And then James had to personally apologize to Bill Graham after that. There's a picture of all of Metallica hanging out with Bill Graham. And James has this like devilish look on his face. And that's because we trashed the dressing room. And long story short, they drew all over my shorts. I thought they were autographing my white OP corduroy shorts I had.
Ooh, OP.
Yeah,
OP.
Yeah, those were the style back then. And instead, they drew a bunch of things I can't say on the air. Well, I guess I can say it.
Say it. Say what the hell was on your pants.
I can't even, I don't even want to say it. But they wrote some they wrote some things that were like not too nice. You know, like they drew a big dick on the back of my leg, big hairy balls, that kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, and that's standard fare for drunk people passed out nowadays.
I thought they were autographing my shorts, but people told me afterwards, they saw me backstage, I was carrying around my camera bag on the ground, which had broken beer bottles in there. The broken beer had spilled into my bag, and I was leaving a snail trail of beer behind me. After the show, I went to the Metallica house, like everyone was going to, you know, for the after party, and we went over to Nation's Burgers, which was right across the street, and I was just totally hammered out of my skull, and I'm waiting in line to order a burger, all of a sudden somebody taps me on the shoulder, I turn around, and it's a police officer, and he goes, I really don't appreciate your pornographic garments, he said, and luckily, Hetfield came in about 5 minutes later and told the cop that they had played a joke on me, blah, 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 and that he was going to take me home, make sure I was... I got home okay.
So, off the streets.
Yeah, but you can read about it in the Cliff Burton biography that Joel McIver put out recently. There's a whole chapter about me getting wasted at Dan the Green in the Cliff Burton book. And it has nothing to do with Cliff Burton, absolutely.
It's just a good story.
But it's got all the different angles from that famous day. But I was so excited, you know. It was like, oh my God, you know, I'd been going to the Dan the Greens for years myself, seeing AC/DC and Van Halen there. And
you see Ozzy with Randy?
No, I was in Hawaii for that one. I missed that one.
Bummer.
But Another point too is Metallica said they only had 4 or 5 photo passes for that show, and if I wanted one, I'd have to work for it. So they had me do their dishes and take out their garbage and stuff. So
they hazed your ass.
They totally did, and I found out they were just messing with me afterwards. But that's what the essay I wrote for the book is called. I washed dishes for Metallica, and a true story. So so they had more than 4 or 5 photo passes, but I fell for it. So
hey, you got in there with your camera. That's all that matters.
Exactly.
And if it means washing a few dishes,
Metallica just crushed the competition that time too. YNT had their silly robot mechanical man that we were going to run out on stage and knock it on its ass and stuff, you know, get a pit going up on stage. But YNT used to be amazing. They were one of my favorite bands. That's where I met Brian, my co-author, Brian Liu.
Let's not leave out Brian's taking the photos too.
He's got the earliest stuff of Metallica ever from their very first shows in the Bay Area and the classic lineup with Mustaine and Cliff Burton, which didn't last very long, so...
Right.
And also, I can't thank enough Ian Christie, the publisher, the guy who runs the publishing company that's putting out the book, Bazillion Points. He's just been amazing. He's a total diehard metalhead himself. So putting the book together has been like the easiest thing I've ever done. It's just been amazing. Just basically me, Brian, and this one guy. We did the whole thing. So it wasn't some big corporate thing like Warner Brothers Publishing where you have to talk to a secretary and... I was able to make like last second spelling changes, you know, like little errors and stuff, you know, taking a picture out I didn't want seen in there, you know.
Right.
But there'll be a couple shots in there that some people might be surprised about certain bands doing certain things that might not be so savory, you know.
Because not everything is all about just the Bay Area bands. It's bands that came through on tour. You had pictures for a lot of those guys, right? Like Anthrax and...
Yeah, it's mainly just on the Bay... focuses on the Bay Area. In fact, we have 2 Anthrax photos in there that are just kind of the old singer and the old guitarist that aren't in the band anymore.
Neil Turbin
and Dan Spitz. And it's just to prove how out of touch the East Coast was. Because it basically proves... they were kind of glammed out with their hairdos. Neil Turbin wore the gloves of metal. It had the metal lace codpiece and all that stuff, you know. And that was the funny thing about it was when they first came out here, everybody kind of gave him a hard time. Dan Spitz was in the lobby of the Kabuki, and Paul Bailoff or somebody was saying, "Hey, Danny, your mom's calling you, saying you're late for dinner and stuff," you know. And it was great because Exodus opened that show. It was Exodus, Anthrax, and Raven at the Kabuki.
Wow.
And Exodus just stomped all over Anthrax. It was like, there was no competition, basically, you know. And even though Anthrax are one of the big four, and they're good guys, and SOD is awesome and everything, DRI is still waiting for their royalty check for the DRI songs that they covered. Charlie and Scott, if you're out there. Or maybe you guys paid it, I don't know.
Let's kind of roll back to when you... How the hell did you come about all of these... people out there that are under 30, they didn't have digital cameras back then. They had film, this thing called film. You had to take to a photo mat and developed back in the day.
Yep, yep.
Those little photo mats are all little drive-through coffee shops now.
It was an instant photo, like now.
Yeah.
You know, take a photo, see it right away, you know. Back then, you had to wait like the next day or a couple hours to have it done. And
right. And so how did you end up with just like, were all these rolls of film just sitting in a drawer somewhere? How did that all come
about? I worked at a photo place for years. And so I was able to get good deals on photo stuff, you could say.
Good deals?
Yeah, so you could say that. So I got to develop my film there, and I had pretty much control of all that stuff back then, you know, which was great. So, yeah, back then it was a thing called film. And like you said, you had to develop it, and all the pictures in the book were from 35mm negatives that we had to scan, that we scanned at 6,000 DPI, which I think is a lot. I don't know much about technical stuff.
For an 8x10, that's probably pretty detailed.
Yeah.
And so, considering what you were dealing with, the lighting and unpredictable circumstances you're in, you're half-crocked at shows, beer flying.
Half-crocked, fully crocked, actually.
And so you've had these pictures for how long in your possession? Well, obviously since the early 80s, but how long have you known what an awesome collection of pictures you had that you really needed to put this and share this with the world, with the book?
Well, I've wanted to do a book like for a long time. It's been like a dream. It's just never really worked out, finding the right publisher and stuff like that. But Yeah, I kind of kept them all pretty much organized in a box. And that was the thing that was kind of weird was a lot of the negatives, I wouldn't even know who it was in the picture until I scanned it. Because you look at the negative, and it's a negative, so you can't really tell who's in the picture. I can just see an outline of some guy with long hair. So I end up scanning the negatives, and all of a sudden here's a picture of, you know, James Hetfield, you know, in a tutu with Kerry King, you know, backstage, you know, doing Gackers from Hell and you know, keg stands and stuff like that. Who knows, you know? But that's what's kind of neat about it was I found a bunch of photos, too, that I didn't even know existed that have been buried in boxes for years, you know? And that's the thing that was really exciting, too. I'd find stuff, like I said, I didn't even know I had, you know? Concerts I don't even remember going to, you know? So it's been a totally great experience, though. No egos involved.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that's the other thing is the ages, you know? We all get older, and a lot of that stuff that, you know, would prevent you from putting out, I mean, are any of these guys, you have to, any worries that any of these guys are going to be like dicks and be like, hey, that's a picture of me, I didn't want that in there.
Well, that's the thing, it's like I'm kind of laying it all out on the line here, so to speak. At this point, I'm almost 50 years old, so what do I got to lose at this point? There's a couple shots in there that some people might not like, but that's the way it was, you know. Most of the people have been pretty receptive. Dave Lombardo did a quote for we were going to use for the back cover, but he didn't get it to me in time, but it was like... he said something like, the books brought back lots of memories and lots of comments like, I don't remember that. Stuff like that. But, the response has been great so far. You know, amazing. So.
Well, let's get another song in there. What do you think?
All right. How about some Megadeth?
As long as it's not on Roadrunner Records, those bastards don't let us play their shit.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's funny because I know the president of Roadrunner. I might have to have a word with him. Yeah. Money.
We are RIAA, not affiliated with being able to allowed to be played anything with a registered with the RIAA. So,
well, that's messed up, man.
Endgame, which is kind of weird, is not on Roadrunner Records, but Combat Records and all that stuff. Yeah, if it's like a big name band, they don't. We could get a cease and desist if they want to be dicks.
Oh, that's messed up.
Metal Blade is cool with us.
What about this, from the album Peace Sells? That's part of it.
That's yeah.
Oh, well, screw that. I'll do my own version then. I wanted to play The Conjuring, Dave Mustaine, born-again Christian. He used to be a Satanist. He doesn't want to play that song anymore because he's a born-again Christian now. Dave, what's up with that? He had some band kicked off some bill in like Saudi Arabia because they had a song about Satan. It's like, oh, yeah, find the Lord and forsake your roots, pal. I remember what was going on back then, Dave. Okay, those rituals over at Bailoff's house with the blood candles and the pentagrams and all that stuff. So... anyway, we were going to play some Megadeth, but so we can't play Metallica either?
Nope.
Well, that pretty much leaves out that I can't think of anything then. How about Angel Witch? Some Angel Witch.
If it's kind of obscured and wasn't on a major record label.
Was Bronze a major label? Absolutely not.
We can play Angel Witch.
You're an Angel Witch. Yeah, because Angel Witch was one of the first bands we really dug, and everybody in the Bay Area just dug Angel Witch. Kevin Haborn actually moved to the Bay Area and played... a show at Ruthie's once. Lars popped me in the face for no reason, but we'll get into that later.
So go ahead, introduce whatever song from Angel Witch, we'll play it. Play it. You're freaking playing it right now.
How about White Witch by Angel Witch, part of the Witch crew.
Try to harm that it's too late, yeah. Burn.
Harold O.
On Brutal Existence Radio's Beast of the Bay.
What's up?
And we're just kind of going over some of the old clubs in the Bay Area. Obviously, we've talked a lot about Ruthie's Inn, and there was the Omni and the Stone. There was a whole bunch of... What are we missing out on as far as clubs?
The Mabuhay, Rock on Broadway, which were right next to each other on Broadway in the red light district there.
Was the Pound going on at that time?
The Pound, no, that Pound came a little bit afterwards. But there was another place called The Farm that opened up. That was pretty cool. It was like a Quonset hut. But, yeah, I'd say Ruthie's. There was actually three Stones at one point. There was the Berkeley Stone, the Stone in San Francisco, and the Keystone Poser Alto. Actually, Palo Alto, but we used to call it Poser Alto. And all three of the Stones were pretty cool. That's where that crazy, intimidating guy, Bob Corona, he ran all three of those. But a lot of times the same band would play all three Stones three nights in a row. So the first night I'd like go to the show in Palo Alto, I'd stay a little more sober, and I'd take photos at that show. And then the second night would be the Stone. That one would be the all-out drink fest, bash mosh from hell show. And then the third show is usually like the one at the Berkeley Stone. Was like when you were all hungover, you know, after 2 days of partying, you know.
So you go to the same show three nights in a row?
So a lot of times we did, yeah. Yeah. It was great, you know. One was, like I said, one was the take photos. The second show was get wasted. And the third show was recover from getting wasted.
That's awesome to have three nights of seeing those bands back then.
Totally, totally.
What would you say out of all of the club shows, the one that just got out of control really fast? The most out of control show that was just like... insane with the pit, with the fights, with the stage diving, people on stage.
Probably when Metallica played, it was supposed to be an unannounced show at the Mabuhay, under the name of the Four Horsemen, and Band Magazine ended up printing that they were playing there, and it was supposed to be a secret show where nobody knew about it, and it was just a total madhouse there. There was literally like 15, 20 security guards that had to crouch down on the stage to hold the people back, and total madhouse. Like, you know, it was right before Metallica left on their European tour for Ride the Lightning. And that was just, like, the most mind-blowing show ever. And people were on stage. There's a bunch of photos of that in the book. It was just crazy. I mean, bodies on bodies. Things are pretty brutal nowadays, but not like it was back then, you know. There was a DRI show when I broke my leg in L.A., where there was five or six pits going at the same time. And it was just madness, you know. Madness reigned.
Well, since you mentioned Cliff, and it was his 25th anniversary of his passing just this last couple weeks ago, got any cool stories that maybe our listeners probably have never heard about Cliff? You got any memories that you want to share?
Yeah, there's a bunch of them. Cliff was like the greatest, most down-to-earth guy ever. It's interesting to think what Metallica would sound like now if he was still with the band. He was like the most level-headed guy of the band, I think, and they used to go to him. If there was like, you know, if he was a tiebreaker when there was a decision to be made, and if they were going to do something that was lame or stupid, he would kind of stop them from doing that. But no, Cliff was amazing. He was like brutally honest too. If he didn't like something, he'd let you know about it. And this one time at the Stone, I felt kind of weird about selling my photos, like the stores and everything. Yeah, I didn't ever want to get the guys pissed off and make them think I was trying to make a buck off of them. So one time at the Stone, I had an 8x10 of Cliff I had taken from the previous show, and I traded somebody a dube for a picture.
That would be a joint, yes. For all you young people.
Yes. It came out of a lid. And anyway, but...
And that's not a hat.
Yeah, exactly. But that was the, all the rage back then, but... I traded the guy a marijuana cigarette for the picture of Cliff, and then I found Cliff, and then we went across the street from the Stone, and we burned it, and the car we were leaning on happened to have the picture on the dashboard, and Cliff looked down and saw the picture, and he goes, "Wow, what a great photo! I wonder where the hell that came from." And I go, "Well, that dude that you're smoking, I traded somebody for it, and that's one of my shots." And so ever since then. Me and Cliff were pretty good bros. He was, like I said, he was one of the greatest guys ever, and he didn't give a crap what anybody thought. You know, he wore bell bottoms, and he used to jam all the time at this place called Maxwell. They'd have these, like, you know, 15-hour jam sessions where they'd take a bunch of acid and shrooms and various other substances, and they would jam for hours at a time to get a generator out there. And Jim Martin from Faith No More, who's one of Cliff's best buddies, he'd go out there, this guy named Dave Donato, and they would have these just sick psychedelic jams, kind of like a Grateful Dead thing, but jam for hours. And that's where they ended up scattering Cliff's ashes after he passed away. It was up in Maxwell at a ranch they used to go to all the time.
And now Jim Martin is a pumpkin grower.
Yeah, he grows squashes in Castro Valley. Yeah, he's found his true calling.
That's right. He had the world's record not too long ago at Half Moon Bay.
Exactly. And I see him from time to time. It shows. He's got a family and stuff. He's kind of settled down. But last time I talked to him, I asked him, are you doing any music? And he said, fuck no.
Wow.
Yeah, Jim was a trip.
Somebody
man.
That just totally bailed on the scene and said,
completely.
Screw this, I'm out of here.
And he got rid of his red trademark glasses and his death prongs. He used to grow these. It was like a goatee, but one on each side of his face, and you call them death prongs. And he shaved all that stuff off and got rid of the red glasses, so you could be standing next to Jimmy Martin at a concert, and you'd never even know it was him.
That's right.
He used to look like one of the Freak Brothers. I think it was Freewheeling Franklin from the fabulous furry Freak Brothers.
Hell yeah.
And Jim was great, though. He's definitely probably the strangest person I've ever met in my life. I was in a side project with him called Satan Love Puppets, which was a continuation of Spastic Children. And I was able to, excuse me, I was able to do the Harold O song, but I got to sing it this time, so it had pro-Harold lyrics this time. So instead of the insults from before, my name's Harold, I'm real cool, I hang out with a bunch of fools, la-li-la, so on and so forth. But that didn't last very long, but that was fun. It was called SLP. We had like two bartenders, one on each side of the stage, serving us like hard liquor the whole time. One of the rules of the band was you had to wear your underwear on the outside of your clothes. Like a Woody Allen movie, just weird stuff like that. But
and no wonder he ended up with Mike Patton.
Yeah, exactly. Those guys are two peas in a pod, let me tell you, man. Mike Patton would see the way Jim had his suitcase all packed all nice and neat and everything, and it just irritated the hell out of him. So he took all the clothes out of his suitcase and threw them all over the room in a fit of rage, you know. But Mike Patton's a trip, man. I don't know about some of his side projects. Faith No More was cool, but some of the stuff where he just screams on and on. Yeah, he did a show at Slim's a while back. I heard it was like him and a wall of marshals all the way around him. And he was just screaming, just crap noise. It's like, wow, that was awesome. You know, he screams. How do you know when the song even ends? That's not a song. That's some guy screaming with a bunch of marshals. I could do that.
Right, right.
What a genius. I don't think so, pal.
You got some old pictures in the book of Jim Martin and Old Faith No More, or just Jim?
There was a couple of Jim, like Jim with Kirk Hammett and stuff, but I don't think they made the final cut. I definitely should have put some Jim in there, though. It's a bunch of violent shots with Killian and some Forbidden Evil,
yeah.
Back when Rob Flynn was in the band. And Paul Bostaff was in the band and stuff. Those are some of the earliest shots in there. Some Death Angel, some shots of Andy Gallion from Death Angel, drummer when he was 12 years old.
Wow.
Which was just amazing, and lots of possessed stuff, but mainly pretty much Testament when they were a legacy, and they used to wear priest collars. That was kind of like their image. They wore priest collars on stage. You know? I can see I probably wouldn't fly so well today with the Catholic Church and the priests. You know what I mean with the qualifications and all that stuff. So that wouldn't be a good image right now.
I don't think so. But what do you think about the resurgence of a lot of the, I like to just call them veteran instead of old or whatever, the bands that are in this book have now come out. Heathen, killer CD a year and a half ago. Death Angel's Relentless Retribution, killer CD.
Exodus
is new stuff. I mean,
it's amazing.
You'd think that these guys never stopped playing in it, and there was a weird period from about, well, let's just say from Nirvana till about 2000. That just kind of was like everybody stopped and went and got day jobs and left the whole metal thing. I know some guys were kind of trudging along and hoping it would kind of all come back.
Yeah, it's come back pretty strong, actually. Like you said, Death Angel, Exodus, Heathen, Metallica even, they're putting out some of the best albums of their career, which is pretty amazing at this point in the game. But
especially with the fact
Machine Head?
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
New Machine Head's amazing.
I think that's like number... It's debuted at number 2 or 3 on the charts this last week, that new Locust CD that just came out.
Yeah, they totally deserve everything they get. They're huge in Europe and stuff, but I've known Rob probably for 25 years and Phil from Violence days, you know. And Rob's probably one of the coolest, most down-to-earth guys I've ever met, and it's great that they're finally getting some success. they finally get some success in the States, you know.
That's, you know, that's that seems like that's always been the problem. You know, I did some roadieing with Vicious Rumors back in the late 80s.
Vicious Rumors.
And Jeff Thorpe is still doing that thing.
Yeah, I remember Vicious Rumors was playing Metal Mondays back in when the scene started. And it's amazing that they're still doing it, you know.
And their new album that came out is...
Digital Dictator?
No.
Never heard of it. Or is that the last one?
The newest one. And it just came out this about 6 months ago.
What's it called? Phone Call from Friend?
Okay. All right, we'll have to edit that shit right there.
No, we won't. Leave it on there. I'm on warts and all.
But the new one came out, and they did it in Germany. They had SPV Records. They couldn't find a deal out here, but SPV Records, it's got them on tour nonstop in Europe, and now they're playing with, like, Hammerfall or something on a 20-something tour.
Yeah, the scene in Europe is amazing. DRI plays over there a lot with the summer festivals and stuff. We played a show in France not too long ago, Hellfest. It was 3 days, 250 bands, and we played with Judas Priest, Scorpions, Ozzy, Slipknot, Rob Zombie, Creator, Sodom, Destruction, Municipal Waste, Down, COC, Opeth opened for us. They'd be Opething for us on the whole tour. But it was just amazing, and people are like a little more passionate about music over there. And the festivals we played were great. We played a bunch of shows in Mexico City, in Cancun with Overkill. Would you please pass the butter? Overkill guys are great. And Sepultura, we played with a bunch of shows with great guys. But yeah, the scene's definitely happening again.
As far as people getting out to the clubs and seeing DRI, well, you got some shows coming up soon?
Yeah, we're playing at Slim's December 16th. Which is 3 days after the book's supposed to come out. So come on out to check us out at the Slim's San Francisco. Last two times we played there, it was total mayhem. Huge mosh pits, most stage diving I've ever seen in a long time. And we're also, since this is internet, we're also playing in L.A. at the Key Club right afterwards. A matinee show and a late show due to popular demand. So... yeah, the DRI show's been going great. I'm having a blast playing with those guys. It's cool actually being on stage for once and having some people take photos of me for a change. You know?
So we'll get you here in San Francisco. Are you guys getting out to Europe anytime? Or are you guys pretty much done with that since you kind of did a lot of that in the last year or so?
Oh, no. We're going back to Europe again in November after we go to South America again.
And we got a lot of European listeners. My show, even though it's on at like 10 o'clock at night here, they can catch the podcast of this as well. And there's, you know, shit back there. It's probably like Sunday morning by the time they're getting the radio on.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, we're playing, I think, about 3 weeks worth of dates there. Like 5 in Italy, playing all over Germany again, in Holland. Some of the shows there have just been amazing. People down front headbanging, kids wearing high tops and denim vests with patches all over it and stuff. It's just been incredible.
Is there an official name for the little figure of the dude, of the little dude mosh? And is there a name of that guy?
It's the skanker.
It's just the skanker.
Yes, exactly.
And we're not talking skank and pickle. We're talking the skanker.
Just the skanker, because he's skanking. And lots of bands, lots of companies have done parodies of that. There's a roller derby team from Arizona that adopted the skanker, and they just added a ponytail, a little tennis skirt, and some roller skates. And this band called D-R-I-V-E-R, Driver, from Japan, and they added a kimono and a samurai sword on it. And then there's some band from Germany called... I don't know what the hell they're called, but they took the skanker and made him into Freddy Krueger. He's got the claws and stuff on there. And let's see what else.
Did you guys patent that shit and make some money?
I should have. I think it's great when bands do that. A lot of people use the DRI logo. They make it into their own thing. But Spike and Kurt, founding members, don't think it's so great. But in Europe recently, we had some shirts made with a Thrash Zone design on it, which is like a yellow triangle that says Thrash Zone. And the merchandising company over there thought they were doing us a favor. They went and got rid of the H on the shirt. They realigned the letters so it said Trash Zone.
Oh, nice.
And it was hilarious. Total Spinal Tap moment. Kurt hung the shirts up to sell at the show that afternoon. And then we looked at all of a sudden we look up at the display and we look, trash zone? Because in Europe they don't pronounce the H. You know, people come up to us all the
time. Trash Zone.
My favorite album is Trash Zone by DRI. I love Trash Zone. And then in Mexico recently too, we had a bunch of bootleggers inside the club or whatever, and they were selling shirts that said "Who I Am" instead of "Who Am I."
That's right. You know, yeah. Got to get your verbiage right when you're in Europe. You know how they change things around.
It's like Spinal Tap. It's a total Spinal Tap moment. So, I thought that was great.
So that Trash Zone shirt should be like a
Trash Zone
collectible item.
Exactly.
How many of those were made? A couple hundred.
And the funny thing is, when we're selling them in Europe, nobody even pointed out that it was spelled wrong, because to them, DRI plays trash metal, you know. So total Spinal Tap, though. I thought it was great. Kurt was all pissed off, you know. But like, you know, now there's a secondary market. Maybe they're, you know, they'll go up in value, you know.
There you go. So we'll be seeing those on eBay for $100 a pop.
Oh, at least. Why don't we play some DRI, since they're not on a major corporate sellout label?
There you go.
And we can play them.
And before we end, we will end the show with a DRI song of your choice, but I want to get your take on, real quick, there is this whole, and I'm in the middle of it, of people that are like old school Metallica fans, new school Metallica fans, and it seems like the old school ones have shunned them like a freaking plague because of their change in music, or change of style, or whatever you want to call it. Give me your take on what has happened for Metallica fans, according to you, as far as that whole diverse kind of a cut. There's been a severing of ties, because I see so much trash talking of Metallica from mostly older people. Oh, they sold out. Oh, their best albums were back in the 80s, blah, blah, blah. What's your Metallica take? I know you're friends with those guys, so you probably have some...
No, I'll be totally honest. I think they kind of lost the plot on like the Load era there a little bit. There were still good albums. It just didn't seem like it was them. But I think the new album is great. I think it's the best thing they've done since the Black album. But yeah, it's interesting to see, like you said, the splits of their fans. You know, on the internet, all these people talking crap. They're saying the new album wasn't produced very well and all this stuff. And I can kind of see where they're coming from in some respect. Like the Saint Anger album, that's just I'd rather forget that even existed. You know, it sounds like crap, but. I can see how people would think, you know, there's two ways of thinking. You know, I think the old stuff is classic, you know, Master of Puppets, Ride the Lightning, Kill 'Em All, those are just amazing albums. And it was a different time back then, you know.
Right.
But I think that they should have just embraced the fact the band is still doing it, you know, and they're putting on amazing shows still, you know.
Right.
They're doing that show, they're doing like 5 or 6 shows at the Fillmore coming up.
Yeah, I heard about that.
For the fan club, which is amazing, you know. What is it? $19.81.
Yep.
For 6 tickets, or you can get them separately for $5.99 each, and that's what tickets cost back in the day.
Back in the day, and then it's going rolling back prices.
But no, I think Metallica are great. It's the fact they're still together, and too bad on the internet and stuff. You know, on these blogs, people just have to talk so much crap about them. You know,
right.
I still have total respect for them. You know,
right. Right.
And the fact that, you know, they got over the Cliff Burton thing, and Rob Trujillo in the band now. In fact, he plays with his fingers on the bass and stuff. It's more like Cliff era stuff than it's ever been, you know. So.
Right. Good. Well, that's cool. That's all I wanted.
Don't
to know.
Be a hater.
Don't be. That's right. It's always I listen to both sides of it and I get it, but it seems like the majority of the people that are on the hater side are the older, as in my age, 40 and up, people that grew up hearing Ride the Lightning, Master of Puppets,
or people that threw up.
And their memories are stuck back then.
Yeah, totally.
And they totally...
Living in the past,
living in the past a little bit. But as far as anybody that wants to compare all the albums, I think that songwriting skills were way better in songs like Master Puppets.
Oh, I totally agree.
And all,
that's the general,
Ride the Lightning. And
that's the general consensus, I think.
I mean, it's regardless of whether you're a fan of now Metallica or old Metallica, I think if you just look at the whole course of their work and go... better songs.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like the fact that they did those 3 albums in a row, you know, Justice for All or even Garage Days, it's just amazing. How many bands can have done like 5 killer albums in a row that you can think of, you know?
Right.
You know, Slayer's still pretty heavy. For me, Slayer, Hell Awaits, that was the best era for me, for them. Because it was like they were just coming up and it was was fun and evil and satanic, you know.
The first time I ever heard a Slayer song, I was at a friend's house, and I remember literally thinking it was like a soundtrack to a freaking a gory movie or a scary movie or something.
Like the cover of Hell Awaits. Somebody's being dragged to hell, you know. So why don't we play some Slayer? This is
they make us search for underground. That's why it's Brutal Existence Radio is underground metal, and that's what we have to dive into, finding stuff that.
Some Metal Blade stuff? You know. Some Metal Blade era Slayer.
But Metal Blade...
At dawn they sleep.
Slagle gave us full okay to even though it's RIAA, whatever it's called, it's all good to play. So, but
right on.
Let's finish off with plugging the book one more time. Where can we buy it? Where can we find it? Where is the website? It's the internet. Give us some, break it all down right here.
Yeah, it's going to be out December 13th. It's called Murder in the Front Row. It's about the Bay Area thrash scene, like we talked about. And it's 400 pages, color black and white. You should be able to order it from Amazon or from bazillionpoints.com, where you get the free dust cover that I mentioned earlier. So, I'm pretty stoked on it coming out. Pick it up, and hopefully it'll give you a good picture of what the scene was like back in the day. And how much fun we had. And
through a drunken man's eyes.
Yes, through a drunken man's lens. There was many times when I left the lens cap on, too.
Oh, there's probably some good pictures.
That was the joke, though, you know. That was the ongoing joke. And a couple times I did leave the lens cap on. But.
And DRI, go check them out when they come to an area near you. Get on their website, their Facebook, all that stuff. Harold takes all comers, so just friend Harold. He'll friend you.
I'll friend you, but I'm almost up to my 5,000 limit, and once I get there, I don't know what I'm going to do. So
you're going to have to start a fan page, a Harold O. fan page.
That would be kind of self-serving. I'm not into that kind of thing.
Then you can't get any more people.
I'll just have to start a Harold Q. page or something.
All right, so Harold's going to take us out with the last tune of the night for the interview with DRI. Right.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah,
it was great, great getting together. I appreciate you coming out here all the way from Livermore. Hanging out in this lawn bowling square here.
It's starting to get dark, and we are in a park in Oakland.
Yes, in deep, darkest Oakland. But
So hurry up and introduce the last song. We get the hell out of here.
All right, I'll hurry up and introduce the last song. This is Slayer, with At Dawn They Sleep.
You don't want to play a DRI song?
This is DRI with 5-Year Plan. I'm
yeah, you listened to Beast of the Bay, and I hope you guys enjoyed that interview. That was taken about 4 hours ago, right before sunset in downtown Oakland. And we're kicking it at a park, and you probably could hear all kinds of stuff in the background, but actually the audio came out pretty decent. And once again, if Harold's listening, thanks a lot for doing that, bro. We all enjoyed it, and I will have this as a podcast tomorrow, and we'll get that out to all the peoples that maybe didn't get to hear it live. So we'll get the little recorded version out there on Pod-O-Matic tomorrow. But one of the cool things that I didn't mention, that Harold has this cool little apartment in Oakland, and when you walk in, he's got the craziest collection of all kinds of random wacky stuff. Wacky stuff being, he has on the wall a whole sheet of, remember the little Mad stickers? Mad Magazine had like Garbage Pail Kids, and I don't even think it was Garbage Pail Kids, but it was kind of in that vein. There was all these stickers of crazy takes on everyday products. And it was, you bought the package of Mad stickers and, like baseball cards. And they had these crazy, Mad, typical Mad Magazine style stickers of all these products, like Ajax and Pepsi. And anyways, he had all this crazy stuff like that, all kinds of figurines. And, his house was, I could have stared at all kinds of stuff for a long time. He had a pretty cool little place where all kinds of memorabilia from shows since back in his days of doing the all the photography stuff, and of course his tours with DRI. So very cool time. I had a blast, and you can tell by all my laughing, he had me laughing the whole time. And you can't really get a picture of it until you're like there talking to the guy. He's hella funny. Maybe just the way he talked on the audio might not come out as funny as I was laughing, but just him and I sitting there on this bench in the middle of Oakland in front of this like green field of grass for lawn bowling was just kind of weird and funny in itself, and all his stories were telling. So anyways, awesome time. Go see DRI when they come out on tour. Say you heard the interview, Harold will talk to you, tell you probably some more stories, you never know. But that was a great time, and once again, podcast version of it tomorrow. So let's keep the Bay Area metal thing rolling with some live Death Angel with Voracious Souls live at the Hard Rock 2007. Yeah!
it been a long night in the pit? You've pushed your way to the front, all bloodied and bruised. The alcohol hasn't quite worn off. That girl you met at the bar? Ah, she'll do. So when it's time to go south of heaven, and you need to cover your acts with a dead skin mask, remember, if you want to make her scream, fire! Condoms by Durex, 3-packs and 6-packs available, because you never know when it might be raining blood.
Listen to Beast of the Bay, some old school Vicious Rumors, off their old release from like, 1989, 1990 right there. Hellraiser with the incredible late great Carl Albert on vocals. And we started you off with a little Death Angel, Voracious Souls, live at the Hard Rock from 2007. We have a grab bag coming up, but check us out. I was so busy with doing the interview with Harold, which I will put on a podcast tomorrow. I didn't get to download any tunes, so if you guys want to give me about 15 minutes, we will get into grab bag. I'm going to have roll 4 songs, maybe 5 in a row, and go do my thing, and then we will jump on the grab bag. And so hang in there, just going to roll some tunes until I can get back with my grab bag songs. Alright, so why don't we start you off with, I'm feeling a little Flotsam and Jetsam old school right now, Escape from Within, right here on Beast of the Bay.